Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Hey there, podcast listeners. Matthew Winter here. Want to help keep the lights on at Let's Get Busy HQ? Share this podcast with friends, with coworkers, with your professional learning community, or just with the people you think are rad, because, hey, they deserve to have a little more kidlit wonder in their world too, right? For those looking to help out with equipment and production, I've installed a donate tab on the podcast homepage at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com. Donate a buck or two if you feel so moved. The donations received will be used to expand our bandwidth, allowing me to post more content. Donations will be used to purchase more equipment, allowing me to provide higher quality audio and also episodes on location at conferences and book events. Donations will also be used to help build a new home and a new look for the podcast. And the final way to help is simply by telling me what you think. Is there a guest I should consider? Was there an episode you particularly liked? Did you connect with a guest in an unexpected way? Find me on Twitter at Matthew Winter or on Facebook at The Busy Librarian. And thanks for all of your support. You are awesome. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winter, an elementary school librarian, author of the Busy Librarian blog, and your host. This is episode number 170 with Marcus Ewert and Lisa Brown, author and illustrator of Mummy Cat, which is published by Clarion Books. Mummy Cat is an amazing book. I kind of love it a lot. The flowing metered text, the rhyming couplets, the color palette employed in the art that's authentic to Egyptian art, the reference and illustration to historical artifacts and hieroglyphs. The care that went into creating Mummy Cat is immediately apparent, and it's something I think you'll appreciate even more deeply after hearing Marcus and Lisa share their process. I can't wait for you to check this one out. Here is episode number 170 of the podcast with Marcus Ewert and Lisa Brown. Let's get busy. Let's Get Busy podcast. Marcus and Lisa, hey, I'm glad you're here to talk about Mummy Cat.
Thanks. We're all... Yeah.
I should also say,
let's get busy.
In a special way of torturing you both as guests, we're all three are recording from different parts of the country, and none of us can see one another, so we'll have to really work on our etiquette as we move forward. Well, hey, I let me just start off the bat and say... I'm fans of you both. Lisa, I know you from Twitter and Facebook, so you know that I'm a fan of you. We've talked before. Marcus, I've read your other books, the in particular the one, The Dresses. I can't think of the title, it's escaping me.
Yeah, it's 10,000 Dresses.
10,000 Dresses. I recall reading that previously in the year and really thought it was exceptional. And then to receive Mummy Cat, it's outstanding. I really think it's a special book, and I got it early enough to be able to read it to students before the school year was over, and it reads aloud really, really well, too.
What did they think?
I think in general, anything with Egyptian history is something to play with. But Lisa, this can be the entire podcast. The entire side story you have going on in the illustrations, that it was one of those books. It doesn't at all happen with every book I read. But every once in a while, there's ones that the kids just make me read it again to them, show them again. And this happened to be one of those that not only do we read that, but they were also picking up my copy and looking at it during book selection. They wanted to investigate it themselves. So that's
perfect.
Yeah.
So you said Lisa, but actually, so we did this book, Marcus and I, in a way that no one is supposed to do their books, which is we got together before we sold it and came up with everything together.
Oh, I love that. That you actually, this was really a collaboration.
It was really a collaboration. We are good friends and we live in the same city most of the time. And Marcus had this beautiful, beautiful poem about a mummy cat that I wanted to illustrate so badly. And we would get together for tea and talk about how we could do the book together. And I think that's why it's so rich, because all of these ideas we put in together.
Yeah. And, it's really rare. I mean, even our editor was saying, you know, look, this really isn't how it comes in. You don't come in with because often, that puts the editor in a weird position of, well, what if they really like the art but they don't like the writing, or vice versa?
Right.
And it's funny too, how we first got into contact over it is. I'm a really slow writer. It takes me a really long time to get the words down the way I want them. And I have been working on it, and I was making announcements on Facebook every time I would finish. It's a rhyming book, so every time I'd finish a couplet or a quatrain, I would say, I finished another one on Facebook. That would be my status post. And you know, Lisa's art, And Lisa and I were friends, but we've become obviously even better friends in the course of doing this. But right from the start, right from the start, when I first had the image of the mummy cat, I was picturing Lisa's art right from the start. And so, but I was kind of intimidated. It was Lisa Brown, and
it is Lisa Brown.
And, yeah. And I didn't want to be flooding her with requests that early on in a friendship, but her art was what I was picturing from the start. And one day on Facebook, I was making yet another announcement about, oh, I finished, you know, stanza 13 of Mummy Cat. And Lisa commented, she goes, I love drawing cats, hint, hint.
Oh, that's adorable.
I was like, what?
And you promptly liked her comment.
I promptly liked her comment. I very nervously wrote her a letter saying, oh my God, you were the person I was picturing. And then she's like, well, send me the poem. I was like, I'm really nervous, but I will. And thankfully she liked it. So, so we were really involved in each other's creative process. Yeah, right from the start. I mean, like I said, I could see Mummy Cat walking down these halls, and I could see it in Lisa's. I was picturing it in Lisa's art as I was going, and so to have it actually be Lisa, and the just stunning for listeners who cannot yet see this gloriousness.
It's gorgeous.
It's
Lisa. Gorgeous. It's beautiful. It is something that I think. I don't know. I hope you don't take this the wrong way. I don't think ever said this about another book, but this is a book that belongs in museum gift shops because of how accurate your illustrations are. In addition to this beautiful, beautiful story, I don't think there's enough good books that make it into places like that where thousands and thousands of people populate these buildings every year. And this is one that it's just beautiful. It's one that needs to get into hands of readers. And Marcus, that's also not to discount your writing. Do you mind if I read you an excerpt from your story?
Oh, I'd love to hear it.
Can I just jump in and say
please
that I am not a fan of the rhyming picture book.
She hates rhyming picture books.
I hate rhyming picture books. But this rhyming picture book, it's a poem. It's beautiful. It's not beautiful a rhyme poem. Just to have a rhyme.
No.
It really works really, really beautifully.
And I have to put on my historian voice while I read it because I don't okay, feel please. Like I can be a big projector when I read it because of the nature of the content. Okay, so here I go. I'm just going to start right from the beginning. I'll read the first two pages. The winds hiss over desert sand. The moon shines down on empty land. And long ago, the pharaohs hid their treasures in this pyramid. Deep within this maze of stone, a creature wakes up. All alone. Oh, oh my word. Ah, that's so good.
You my can favorite, do the audiobook.
My, yeah, there you no. go. No. My favorite line though, Marcus, my favorite line, just as the cat is coming out of the sarcophagus, this line, a cat who moves without a breath, a mummy cat who's passed through death. Oh my word. What a grown up phrasing. What a beautiful way to word that. I mean, it is, as Lisa said, it's so poetic to word it that way.
And my favorite line is two small bodies wrapped by priests. Like, when in a picture book do you get like a mummification scene? Actually, you do. And there's this beautiful book by Aleki. Do you know Aleki?
I know Aleki very well. Which book are you referring to?
It's called Mummies in Egypt. And it's a nonfiction book about the process of mummification. And it's just terrific.
I don't know that. Mummies in
Egypt. It's old. It's out of print, but it's wonderful. It's worth finding, tracking down.
I always love in Aleki's work that beautiful detail there too. It's so geometric and precise and gorgeous. Wow. This is a testament to being on social media then and just being not only sharing
and starting on social media and then meeting up in real life and having a true collaboration.
Being on social media and then realizing that you were in the same town or were you aware of each
other? We were aware of each other. We were already friends.
Oh, yeah, okay. we had already met I think Lisa had I already done a tarot card reading for you at that point.
I think you did.
Nice. I do tarot card readings, and I think that was our first live face to face.
Yeah, it was our first.
Okay.
Yeah. but yeah, I mean, I was intimidated. You know, I had only had one book under my belt at that point, and.
But can I say what a book it is?
Oh, my word.
That book is an amazing book, 10,000 Dresses.
It's
I think
phenomenal.
It's the first trans picture book.
As far as I know, yeah.
Right. If it's not the first, it's certainly among them. And it's so well written as well. I mean, I also come from being in the library. Many of the books that take on topics that aren't talked about very often sometimes don't. They're not written as, I don't know, as beautifully, as eloquently as they should be. They don't stand up as a great story to read aloud over and over. It just more feels like, well, this is a book about child abuse, so we're going to talk about this child abuse. Or this is a book about having two dads, so we're going to talk about these two dads.
About wanting to create dresses, and it just happens to have a trans child in it.
That is the way to word it, too. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. Marcus, can we talk about 10,000 Dresses for a minute?
Sure. Let's talk about 10,000 Dresses.
And as the illustrator, I just want to give a shout out to the wonderful Rex Ray, who passed away last year, who was the artist of 10,000 Dresses.
I did not know Rex Ray passed away.
He did. Yeah.
Did you get to meet prior to that, Marcus?
Yeah, you know, once again, so Rex Ray also lived in San Francisco, where Lisa and I live, or Lisa lives most of the year. And he had been an old friend of mine. He, I always loved his artwork. And he used to work at City Lights Bookstore. I had known him from way back in the day when he used to design stuff for City Lights Books and hadn't even really started doing his own beautiful, beautiful collage work and abstraction work and stuff. He was more known as a highly accomplished graphic designer. And so, yeah, again, he and I came in together. We were going to go with one very small press for 10,000 Dresses, and then they ran out of money, as sometimes happens with small presses. And he turned around a friend of his who he had worked with at also at City Lights, who was now working at Seven Stories Press in New York. He just turned right around and showed it to them, and they had never done kids books at that point. So we were there first. So again, as with Lisa, I got to kind of do something that really you don't get to do very often, which is we came in together with the art and the text. All, I mean, I'm going to be spoiled forever. I just started thinking about it. I'm like, what if in the future I get paired with an illustrator I don't like? Because I've been so, I've been so fortunate. And then, unfortunately, Rex passed away. It was either this year or last year. But so that was sad. And, you know, to your point earlier, I was reading at one of the colleges out here. They invited me in to read 10,000 Dresses. And a woman there was saying that, you don't want a book. Want a book with like social policy text, right? That's not good. And also too, this is less true than it used to be, but there was a long time I feel like where books about, let's say, multiracial adoption or disability or, you know, issues where somebody there is a point that somebody wants to make and it's an underrepresented community, let's say. Mm-hmm. And like you said, the story maybe is not that great. Also, sometimes it was just like, it's like, oh, well, we're telling a realist story, so the children have to be drawn in chunky charcoal and they really shouldn't be anatomically correct. It should be really clumsily drawn. And that's such a disservice to, it's like, no, the art should be more beautiful. It shouldn't be like less beautiful. So I feel super fortunate that I got to work with two. Mummy Cat isn't particularly a social issue book in the same way, but
I don't know. I think you tie into something in Egyptian history, which is something that, you know, happened a lot, but I don't think I think it's for kids to discover. I know that you on the back of the book, it mentions about you being wanting to grow up to be an Egyptologist. But, but in this way that you have this sort of like vying for the throne, for the that sub story that happens in the illustrations, I think you've got that sort of that offering something different. It could just be a story with a relationship about a cat and a queen, but there's something more to it. And
Well, that's the idea, is that it's historical. It has a lot of nonfiction elements, but there's still a story there. It's absolutely still a narrative, mm-hmm, which is the funnest way to see history, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. I think it's great. I love the way that you've drawn these illustrations, Lisa, that everything looks like old papyrus, like found art or something.
Right. Well, all of the objects have a basis in a real object. So I did a lot of research and I went to museums and I looked at lots and lots of books and lots of online photographs. And so almost every single thing in the book has a real life mirror on the outside.
Oh, man. Did you do
including the people?
Including the people?
Including the people. I looked really hard at Egyptian art, and that's why the people look the way they do. Because they look like Egyptians.
See this? Here I am appreciating it even more. Did you do the art digitally or do you work in traditional medium?
It was both. So I what I did is I did it in pen and ink and gouache on paper.
Yeah.
And then I scanned it in and I layered it in a collage with digital elements that I had scanned in separately. So there is actually papyrus in there.
That's what I was going to ask, because I can see, you can, if you look close, it does look like in a collage way though, because different items have different texture to them, but the texture that is beneath the colors is so cool.
Yeah. So there's papyrus and there's an old file folder and a paper bag and walls and linen. Yeah. And there's all sorts of texture in there layered on top of each other.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and I want to say, too, I know that Lisa and I are both Capricorns as a tarot card reader and metaphysical enthusiast. I just have to say that Capricorn is a sign known for its doing. We can get a little obsessive with our our art making. But I remember when Lisa was at the point in which she was experimenting with, well, should it be gouache or should it be outline? And how do I get this texture on? And yeah, she was scanning in different. I mean, I wasn't there beside her, but I remember that there was quite a long period where she was very painstakingly kind of, you know, going through a lot of different options to get just that right thing. And boy, I think it paid off because, yeah, the texture is so rich. It's beautiful, so beautiful. Yeah.
Lisa, what does that look like for you? Are you being the illustrator process, are you just doing sort of color studies and texture studies and just, I don't know, trying to figure out what design, what approach is going to look right for the story?
Yeah, that's I'm trying to see how my style that I'm comfortable with can fit into the best sort of mode of each particular book.
Is it something that just ends up clicking for you? How do you know? Are you just trust your artist intuition?
It does. It's funny because I tried this one painting in gouache over and over. I think I did four different versions and it just wasn't clicking. And then I did a quick pen and ink sketch with watercolor and I thought, oh, no, this works. So yeah, it does click eventually, hopefully.
I think I got to see some of that and some of that process. And I remember, yeah, once those outlines were there, it was like, oh my goodness, this is awesome. Like it totally, everything kind of cohered at that point. It was so beautiful. And also, too, let's talk about Lisa's color palette. So beautiful. And
oh my
so
which I stole directly from Egyptian paintings.
It looks that way. I mean, it looks like you're taking colors of the earth, you know, found objects, plant dyes. It looks like that.
Mm-hmm.
It just, there's a meticulousness to the detail in both your editing of the text, Marcus, but also your art, Lisa, that just, this looks like it was a book that was gone over and over and over to make sure everything was in its right place and able to tell the story without having, I don't know, misspoken details alert the reader. It just seems like, no, everything is correct here. So now you can just enjoy the story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope it's correct. We had an Egyptologist look it over, which was exciting.
Yeah. This friend of my brother got married a few years ago and, I was talking to one of the other wedding guests and I was like, oh, well, what do you do? And we were already working on the book at this point, Lisa and I mean, this is several years in the making. And I asked this friend of my brother's and he said, oh, well, I'm head of, I don't know how you pronounce the word, papyrology. It's papyrus studies.
Studying papyrus?
Yeah, at Yale.
Oh, wow.
And I was
really?
Like...
Wow.
And Capricorns, we like official, we like big official, like Yale is a good word for a Capricorn. So I did not let that opportunity go to pass. I was like, oh, well, that's crazy because I happen to be working on a book and there's going to be hieroglyphs in it. And, you know, when the time comes, could we show them to you? Because Lisa and I do not want to have spurious hieroglyphs in the book. That is not.
That's not okay.
That was not right. Even an option that we were going to do like made up, you know, oh, here's a squiggle and here's an eye and
right.
Here's a bird. And no.
So that makes it even sweeter though, because one of the hieroglyphs you share in the end is I assume then the actual hieroglyph for meow.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Come on. That's amazing.
Well, the word for cat in Egyptian is meow, and then when you say cat, you put there's a cat hieroglyph that you put on the end, but it phonetically spells out M-I-U, mew.
Mew.
Yeah.
Yeah, their word for cat was M-I-U-T, mute, and what people don't necessarily know about the Egyptian language is you know, everyone knows it's hieroglyphs, but for a lot of systems of where you're writing with ideograms, there's usually always at least some way that you can sneak phonetic stuff in. So they had phonetic signs. So, I mean, that was how Champollion was able to crack the Rosetta Stone, was able to decipher hieroglyphs. Is, you know, he'd see these cartouches with royal names, and he assumed, he's like, I bet that's a royal name. And so he's able to go, okay, Cleopatra, that's probably Cleopatra, and some of the other names. So, yeah, so there are, oh, and then Lisa and I, this is, honestly, this is maybe my favorite part of the book right now, is we got our name spelled out phonetically, Marcus and Lisa, and in little cartouches, which are the little ovals that encircle a name. We had those made into ink stamps. So when we sign people's copies of the book, we write our names in English and then we stamp it with the hieroglyphs, and they came out beautiful.
That is amazing.
They really look great. I have to say, they look awesome.
Shoot.
Really?
Oh my word. The places you can go with this book, just for the fun that happens beyond the book. Like you're saying, when you're visiting schools and you're doing these things at book signings, you're bringing, I don't know, you're just extending that experience for these kids.
Right, we're really excited about school visits. We have a couple scheduled and hopefully a lot more, but we have all sorts of activities that we want to do with the kids.
Oh, man.
We wanted to do a, what would be in your tomb sort of discussion.
What would be like in your tomb?
Yeah. In your tomb, because you surround yourself with the things you love in life. And so what would be in your tomb? I like to, you know, get them early, start thinking about death.
Exactly.
What would be in your tomb, Lisa?
Oh, what would be in my tomb? I guess I would have my sketchbooks, and I would have my pens, and I would have a lot of books in my tomb.
A lot of books?
Because books are, yeah, books are where it's at.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about you, Marcus? What's in your tomb?
Yeah, a lot of books, a lot of books. And I would have some colored pens in there, too. Yeah, mostly tons of books, and I have some stuffed animals that I'm partial to, and some little sort of Dungeons and Dragons figurines, little plastic fantasy creatures and little figurines. So a few toys, a few books, a few pens, actually lots of books, and many, many notebooks.
Yeah, many notebooks.
And I have computer and Facebook. I want that future archaeologist to come down there and just find the computer all set up, and it's already on Facebook, and they can just go right to it.
Just get to work. Here you go.
They can learn all about me. Yes.
And your status would be dead.
Yeah. Dead, .. and loving it.
Oh, or dead, word. ?
Oh, that's better.
There you go. You just set it on. I know you can set Facebook to publish stuff, you know, on a schedule. Just set it for like another 60 years or something.
Yeah, once like in Mummy Cat, it could be once every 100 years. You know, one night every 100 years.
Oh my word, this is amazing.
Update, yeah.
Are you seeing that not only is there school visits, but you've got a whole realm of ways to interact with the librarians and the teachers that you're visiting too?
Well, I think thousands and thousands of years from now, like, you know, Mummy Cat should be a book that, you know, is the culture is continually receiving updates on, and, you know. I mean, I don't want to sound arrogant, but this is kind of like the discovery of King Tut's tomb. It's kind of on par with that.
Oh, wait, I have a fun discovery thing about your book that I wrote down, I didn't want to forget. I like when you take off the jacket of the book that you've got, you know, the illustration of the queen and her cat on the front coming in, and in the back of them as mummies. That was cool.
Exactly. Thank you. That was our editor was very into that because we wanted to be able to unwrap something because it's all about wrappings.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to have something underneath. our wrapping of our cover.
Oh, nice. It's meta. I like that.
It is meta.
And you know, one of my one thing I take a lot of pleasure in with Mummy Cat is okay, so I have a 4.5-year-old nephew, and he's totally gaga for Mummy Cat, and he loves the hieroglyphics, and he loves the scene where, I don't want to give too much away the story, but maybe some characters die, I don't know. And he loves that parallelism on the front and back cover, where they're pretty much in the same posture. Is that right, Lisa? They're pretty,
yep,
it's exactly. A pretty similar pose. And in one they're alive and in one they're dead. And like, I think that's pretty deep, you know, that it's like, but they're still together. They're still friends. It's not a huge shift. Like them living to them dead is not actually that big of a deal. It's their being together.
I think we're misrepresenting death here.
Oh, and also,
it's kind of a bigger deal than that. Yeah.
I also don't want to miss the opportunity to say it shouldn't be a spoiler to say that they are dead, because if the spoiler was they're not really dead, they're just wrapped up, that would be horrifying.
and what I love is that this book, you know, I get scared very easily. I cannot watch horror, we could even more so. And you know, generally in horror movies, the scene where a coffin is opening and you see a hand coming out, like that's horrific. That's this, you know, that's the terror shot right there. That's what you do not want to have happen. And what I love in Mummy Cat is how by the time you get to that, you so want to see this, you so want to see these two dead creatures reunited.
Yeah.
And you have so much fondness for them by this point, and any scariness of it is banished, and you're just longing for them to, you know, you want to see a hand come out of the coffin because, you know, oh, they get to be friends again. Oh, I hope this happens.
Right. The hieroglyph on the coffin is the hieroglyph for friend.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, especially when you've got the story as you do with betrayal in it, I think it's important to have that reconciliation of the two separated friends.
Right.
So it's necessary. It's nice. Hey, you're not. Are you collaborating on anything new? Are you going behind publishers' backs to bring them something awesome or great?
We have a few ideas that we're not ready to tell or show anyone yet, but we're working on a few things.
It's great that you're keeping it, that this collaboration worked out and that there's opportunity or discussion for something again. That's great.
Oh, yeah. I think we'd love to. We'd absolutely love to work together. And also, you know, we should also say that, you know, as rare and as precious as it was that Lisa and I got to work together so closely, and that I feel like we each got to pour into our part of the collaboration, you know, so much of our own individual loves. We were super blessed with our editor, Ann Hoppe at Clarion Books. And she, just right from the start, when it was sent to her, I don't know, she, in like 3 days, she replied back, which is, you know, that's super fast in publishing to get a 3-day turnaround. And forget, she said something like intrigued, charmed, and impressed or something. And
wow.
She was just, you could tell. And I think a few days later, we got like a longer statement from her, but she was really kind of pulled in immediately. And definitely I'd say you know, Matthew, you were saying earlier, like there's no jarring detail that sticks out that then throws you out of the story.
Right.
I feel like,
right.
And Lisa, who was the art director?
Christine Kettner.
And that she both,
is wonderful. That's a name I've heard before. All right.
Yeah.
And both of them, Lisa and Chris, I mean, excuse me, Anne and Christine. Oh my God. They were everyone. I didn't deal with Christine as much or really at all because of, it's an art thing, but I would hear through Lisa and I would, you know, I'd sort of be privy to the conversations a little bit. But boy, they worked with us so carefully, and the way in which they would solicit input and juggle two streams of input, you know, one from me and one from Lisa. And so I feel like that the really rich smoothness and how well integrated everything is. So we were super blessed with also the editorial team was great.
Love it. Well, I think you've both created a gorgeous, gorgeous book that's going to be read aloud a ton. And I'm thankful to have gotten a chance to read it beforehand, but also get to learn more about what's behind it, because I think that it enriches the story even more. I can't wait to hear all about the different school visits and things that you're doing, because again, I think you're going to be enriching that content even beyond this great story that you're sharing. So thanks again for coming on to talk.
Oh, our pleasure. It was really fun.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, before I let you go, let me ask
you about the book.
Yeah. Before I let you go, let me ask my kickball question. I'm assembling an all-star kid-lit Dream Team kickball tournament, and I'd love to know what one person alive or past from the kid-lit world you would want on your team and why. And Marcus, why don't we start with you?
Sure. I would pick probably Lewis Carroll, because I feel like I didn't do my research on this prior to the show, but didn't he invent like mirror chess or something?
Because really?
He had that whole, you know, he loved chess and he had that whole mathematician, logician background. And I know he came up with some really sideways kind of logical system of, I'm pretty sure it was chess. So anyway, I feel like in kickball, he would bring in this whole through the looking glass skewed strategy so that whoever we were up against would, you know, not be able to see which direction the ball was coming from.
My word, what a crazy awesome answer. Thank you. Mirror chess. I'm sure you're right, but that's, I haven't thought
about
that.
Yeah, I feel like that's what it was called. And don't ask me more on that. That's all I know.
Well, then I'll go to Lisa. Lisa, who would your pick be?
I'm going to have to say this is sort of a boring answer, but my husband, who is named Daniel Handler, who happens to be the official representative for Lemony Snicket, who is certainly a kid-lit guy.
Lisa, I'm so ignorant. I had no idea Daniel Handler was your husband. Are you kidding me? Why
really?
Am I not connected? I just don't care. I'm also...
You must have known.
I don't know things.
I was trying not to say that earlier in the podcast.
I was literally going to ask, and I very much apologize for it, jumping on your words, but I was going to ask, hey, so how was it illustrating that book for Lemony Snicket? Was that cool? Because
yeah,
it's a great book, but it was your freaking husband.
It was really easy to get. But the reason why I would choose him is because he wouldn't play kickball. And neither would I. I hate kickball. So he could just sit on the sidelines and badmouth people.
Nice. I like that you both are taking two very different approaches, but also equally effective approaches. And really, I cannot say this enough. I love your book. It's beautiful. It's a work of art. And it, every time that I've read it, which is 30, 40 times, it keeps giving and giving back to me and those that I'm reading it to. And that is a really special
exactly
gift.
Who we envisioned the audience. We wanted kids, librarians, teachers to groove off this.
You're hitting every audience member perfectly. It's engaging in every way at all those different ages. And I really thank you for sharing it with me and everyone listening today.
Well, thanks so much for having us on. This is a treat.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Like what you hear? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a comment on the blog at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.